want apple juice.
Lucas wants apple juice.
I know, I heard him
can
say
I
that.
Can I have apple juice?
Yeah, you can have apple juice.
Can I have soda?
Yes, you can have soda.
Can I press that button?
No, you can't press that button.
Why?
Because that's going to play the theme song. I'm not ready to start the pot.
He's not just Ty Dad, he's my dad.
James Gutman!
What is up, guys? James Gutman here on Hi Pod. I'm Dad. Welcome to another edition of the show. It is Friday. It's actually Friday the 13th in 2020. So, bam, bam, you guys are getting hit by both ends on that one. Hopefully you survive the day. Black cats, walking under ladders, all that good stuff. You're avoiding it. Cracked mirrors. What other unlucky things are there that could possibly... There's a lot of unlucky things that can happen in the world. Trust me on that one. So be careful today, whatever you do. If you're superstitious, watch out. If you're not superstitious, this isn't a good day to become superstitious. So be careful out there navigating the world. And if you are finding me on HiPodOmDad.com, welcome. You can see all the archives right there. You can actually find the archives anywhere that were available. If I'm found on Audible, maybe found on Amazon Music or Apple Music or iTunes, iHeartRadio. I'm naming stuff over and over again. I think iTunes and Apple Music are the same thing at this point. Whatever you find me on. If you found me in any of those services, do me a favor. Give a rating, give a review, give a like, give a subscribe. We're basically available anywhere where pods are casted. So if there is a place to find a podcast, you can very much hear me through your devices. I am available on the Google machine. I'm available on the Alexa machine. I'm available on all the machines. So take a listen. Check us out every Friday. Thank you. Also, if you're on here and you get a chance, go to HiBlogOmDad.com. That is the blog that inspired this podcast. I am there every Monday, every Wednesday doing blogs about my kids, talking about, you know, our relationship, how much I love my children. It is fantastic. I love doing it. It really brings me joy in my life. So thank you guys for that as well. And go to Amazon, check out the Expectant Fathers Activity Book. That is my latest book, my third book, in my life. Love this book. It is doing great. It has great reviews. I want to thank all of you who have checked it out, who have picked it up, who have, you know, left a rating or have, you know, sent me over a message. It means a lot to me. I enjoyed writing it. Made this quarantine go by a lot faster, or lockdown. I guess I've been saying quarantine, but it's really technically it was a lockdown. Whatever it was, being stuck in the freaking house, it helped to write the book. And this has been a great week, man. Before we get into anything, I want to tell you guys a little bit about what this week brought with it. I talked about this a year ago. I've talked about it sometimes on the blog, and there's still some people who don't know about it. But this week is actually a big holiday week for me and for my daughter and for Lucas too, my son. Doesn't celebrate it as much, but this week was our, at this point, fifth annual Novi-ster. What the hell is Novi-ster? Let me tell you guys what Novi-ster is. A couple of years ago, 2015, I was home with my daughter, and she was off from school for Veterans Day, right? Now, Veterans Day is great. You see a veteran, you thank them, you watch stuff on TV, but especially for little kids, it's kind of like, you know, thank a veteran, and they're like, okay, and they're like, okay, what are we going to do with the other, you know, 23 hours of our day? Or if you don't even leave the house, it's like, who are we going to thank? You don't want to just randomly call veterans, you know, grab your phone and start dialing numbers. Are you a veteran? No. Okay, bye. And you keep hanging up until you find one. So really, there wasn't a lot to do. So she was bored. She didn't know how we should pass the time. And I had just gone into the storage area and found all the decorations. I had put away the Halloween decorations. It was November. And I had come across the old empty Easter eggs. We have, what we do is for Easter, we take those little plastic eggs and we fill them up with either candy or, you know, coins or whatever it is that year. I remember one year I did little squishies that I bought somebody bought them, not me. A bunny bought them. There was a bunny who bought those things. Hit them all around the house, usually on Easter. So I found these empty eggs. So I told Olivia, she was bored, didn't know what to do. So we had an egg hunt. And as luck would have it, we actually had just had hat day at school for her. At this point, she was, got second grade, I guess, because she's in seventh now, which is effing insane. So she had this bonnet. She had this, like, it was basically an Easter basket hat that she wore. So I put her in the hat. We hid the eggs around the house, and we had the first ever Novistar egg hunt. And this evolved every year to the point where, as Veterans Day comes up, we get excited, Olivia and I, about Novistar. As it went on, we started to evolve. And we used to watch a show on YouTube. I don't even know if it's still on there. I'd long since unsubscribed, and I apologize to these guys. But they did a show called Will It on there. I mean, they did other things. It was Good Mythical Morning was the name of the show. So these two guys would basically take a food, right? Let's say like waffles. And they would go, Will It Waffle? And what they do is they take a succession of different meals and foods and they make them into waffles and then they eat them and then they throw up. So they'll be like, you know, peanut butter and jelly, will it waffle? And they'll make a peanut butter and, you know, a waffle out of peanut butter and jelly, and they'll eat it and they'll say yes or no. Ooh, it's good. We like it. But then eventually it gets disgusting, like squid eyes, will it waffle? And they make like disgusting ones, and then they retch over it. And we used to laugh when she was little. We used to love it. So we do that ourselves every year. This year, I think, was the fourth annual one of those. We started that about a year or two in. And I remember one year we did Oreos. Last year, I did Pastaroni, Will It Pastaroni. And it was things like I made Pastaroni, but I put like cream cheese and bagel bits into it. And it was like bagels and cream cheese, Will It Pastaroni, sardines and stuff like that. And this year, I was worried. I'm going to tell you guys why I was worried. I was worried because my daughter is older now. And I feel like a lot of stuff that I do, sometimes I feel kind of lame. I'm going to be honest with you. She's cool. She's a cool kid. And when you're that age, I remember being that age, everything is kind of like, you know, even stuff you like, like, look what I got. You don't want to be like excited. It feels like dorky when you're that age. So if somebody gives you something that you really want, you don't want to be like, yay. You're kind of like, cool. That's cool. That's great. It's like a little Paris Hilton age. You know, that's hot. All right. So she undersells everything. It's like having the Undertaker as your kid. Everything that we do, she's like, you know, makes the face, moves on. So I'm worried leading into this year's Novistar and getting ready for it. And I started building it up before. I'm like, we're going to do Novistar. It's going to be great. And I went to Party City, got some candy, got some M&Ms, filled up the M&Ms. I got an Elmo hat for Lucas to wear. And then we used the Elmo hat to collect the eggs around the house. So I did the hunt around everything. And I decided to do... this year was Will It Avocado Toast, because my daughter's been eating a lot of avocado toast. That's been her thing, you know. So what I did was I took toast and I would puree things and kind of smear it on the toast, and we ate it. This year I tried not to be too gross because I was worried. I didn't want to turn her off from it. I was like leading into this is going to be the worst year. This is going to be the worst one. And we had done, so I did like, I got a pizza. I put a pizza in a blender. Blended the pizza, smeared the pizza on the avocado toast. I did macaroni and cheese. One of the gross ones is I took rice and kind of like this satay sauce, this Thai satay sauce, and I pureed them together until they were a paste, and I smeared that on toast. It was cool. I try not to make it that gross because I was worried. I'm like, this kid is gonna hate it this year. And we did it. And she really liked it this year. To the point where when it was done, she got all excited and said, I want to do one. And every year I'd always asked her to do one. She never wanted to make one. I said, why don't you do one for me? I always know what it's going to be. So she's like, Dad, you have to leave. You have to go away so I can do this. So I went down to my office. I was sitting in here, you know, playing Call of Duty, doing the exercise bike, all the fun, boring dad stuff that I do. And she calls me upstairs. And she had made a series of smoothies, complete with a slideshow, which is what I did the first year. And I had long since stopped, because I kind of felt like I was pushing a little. As she got older, I always felt like I was pushing it. And she went back in time and did it with the same fervor that I did the first one. And she had a slideshow on the computer. And the slideshow, because what we did is we record our Will It. You know, this is between you and I. Nobody sees this. It's kind of just for us. But we record it on video. And we watch it back at a certain point. So I have all of them dating back. And if you watch it, the slideshow on the computer screen is facing the camera. So the camera can see what the object is, but we don't know. You're not supposed to know. You're supposed to guess as it goes. She did all that, man. She made a slideshow and she made a series of smoothies. Not only did she make the smoothies, but she went out of her way to use food coloring so you wouldn't know what it was. And oh my God, dude, it was without a doubt the best version of Will It there has ever been. She did one. I was convinced it was cigarette ashes. I'm like, this is cigarette ashes. She's like, no. It was black, gritty, and it tasted like ash. What it turned out it was, she took salad and smoothied it with water and then put purple food coloring in it. It was the grossest thing ever. She had some that were bright blue. And the cutest part was that Lucas, who was never usually involved in this, Lucas kind of runs around, does his thing, he sat next to me for it. And in the beginning, one of the first ones that she made was this kind of, I think it was not the applesauce one. The very first one was ice soda. That was okay. Lucas didn't really like that one. But then the second one was, it was honey and it was applesauce. And I didn't like it that much. And Lucas downed it, just sat next to me and just drank the whole thing in one foul swoop. It was a great year. And it was my favorite Novista. It was easily my favorite Novista. I do these insane holiday traditions, and I've talked about this before. This isn't really the point of the podcast today, but I've talked before about the fact that it's easy to worry about what you're supposed to do with things. What are holidays supposed to be? How are we supposed to celebrate it? And sometimes life throws you curveballs. Sometimes you lose family. Sometimes you lose situations. Sometimes people aren't around for it. We had one year where, I don't know, everybody else, there was somebody who was sick, and all of a sudden everything fell apart. I wrote about it. It was a Christmas. It happened on Christmas Day and ended up just being me, Olivia, and Lucas, the three of us, all day. And I thought the day was ruined. I was worried. I get anxiety around holidays. I'm going to let you guys know. Anxiety is not the right word because I don't get anxiety. But I get messed up sometimes in the head when it comes close to holidays. I don't want my kids to have bad holidays. It worries me. As somebody who grew up in a world where maybe my holidays weren't always so great, I don't talk about my childhood that much. There's a reason for all that. So for my kids, I want them to have the best possible holidays they can have. So as the time approaches, I worry about how I'm going to give them that holiday. And last year, one of them fell apart so bad that I told myself, don't worry about it anymore because we pulled it out. You know, we made it work. So every year when these things start to, you know, maybe don't go the way they're supposed to go, maybe we don't have these big extravaganzas, maybe we don't have all these people to celebrate with, I try to find ways to make these things enjoyable. So we do not only Novista, but also for Christmas, my daughter wrestles Santa Claus. We have a pro wrestling match where she fights Santa Claus's evil brother in order to win a present. Stuff like that, man. We have a lot of fun when it comes to some of these things and what we do. And yeah, that's always been my advice to everybody. If you're out there and you're trying to figure out how to do holidays, you're trying to figure out how to make your kids happy, it's up to you. You don't have to read The Night Before Christmas. You don't have to do any of that stuff. Do whatever feels right for you. And in the end, it works out, man. We've turned Veterans Day into a yearly thing. That's the big deal, man. It's kind of funny. It's trumped a lot of other holidays. We have a lot of different things we do. We go to, you know, medieval times for certain holidays. We have certain things that are all linked to different events. So yeah, it's exciting. All right, let's talk a little bit about today's podcast or what I want to talk about. I want to talk about something that's important to me and something that I feel like has become a theme, something that has become something that I'm dealing with, and that is betting on myself. And I think a lot of us at one point or another in our lives, we have to bet on ourselves and we have to, I would say, believe in ourselves, because it sounds like, of course I believe in myself. And you say that and we say it out loud, but I kind of feel like a lot of times we don't. Outwardly, maybe we do. If somebody's around you, they'll think, well, this guy's got a lot of self-confidence. But a lot of times it's a character we play, something that we do. And as a fan of professional wrestling since I was a kid, I always felt like some of my self-confidence was based on characters from TV. Walk into a room with a little swagger in your step. You don't know who you're talking to. And in your head, you're just kind of like saying things and catchphrases or whatever. And it's easy to lose that. It's easy to lose that belief that you can do anything. And in reality, I don't know. I think we can. I think anybody can do anything. Isn't that weird? You talk to people, they don't agree with you. They're like, well, that guy's stupid. Yeah, maybe. But I feel like if somebody isn't capable of something, they don't usually dream bigger than they can achieve. Does this make sense? I kind of feel like if you have something that you need to do, something that you believe you can do, chances are you can do it. I don't know. Maybe there's something to me built inside of us that kind of limits your dreams, where if you can't do it, you don't dream it. You kind of set your own expectations based on your ability. So if there's something inside you that is like, you know, I want to be an astronaut, then maybe in the grand scheme of things, you can be. And your brain knows it, your body knows it, and everything inside you knows it, and that's why you're dreaming it. Maybe you don't dream of it, and that's because you can't do it. I don't know, so I kind of see it that way. There's a phrase, there's a quote that has always been attributed to Gandhi. I don't know if it's really Gandhi, and that kind of sucks too. You have these quotes that are great, and then you're like, Gandhi said that. And people are like, Gandhi didn't say that. Like, oh, whoever the hell said it. It is a great quote. And to this day, I think if I have to name my favorite quotes, this might be my favorite one of all time. Because as a 40-something-year-old man, I've been through the ringer a few times, and I've been through situations, and I've dealt with different things. And this is something that has, in my opinion, been true in so many different aspects of what I've tried to do. Here's the quote. Are you ready? The quote goes, first they ignore you, and then they laugh at you, then they fight you, and then you win. I love this quote. Because in my life, anything that I've tried to do that is outside the box, whether it was starting my own website in 2005 or, different things that I've tried to do, I've dealt with this. I've gone through this, series of things, and I've seen it with other people, startups and different companies, and you read success stories, and it almost always follows that way of going. Think about Netflix even, man. Netflix, when Netflix was supposed to go to, be sold to Blockbuster, they offered them to buy it, and Blockbuster kind of laughed them out of the building, and then Netflix kind of took over. It was always like that. I started a website in 2005, and I had been writing for a very successful website. To this day, I think it's still out there. I don't really follow it as much, but it was something that was around even before the internet, since like the 80s, this wrestling site. And I had written for them. It was a big deal. It was like such an honor to write for them. I never really fit in with them. And I wanted to start my own site. And so I went out and I did. And initially what ends up happening is nobody talks about you. They pretend like you don't even exist. It's whatever. Because it's easy to do that. They're not going to give you any free pub. And that's what they say. They're like, I'm not going to give them any free publicity. I'm just going to ignore them. Da, da, da. But then eventually they can't ignore you anymore because everybody's talking about you. Did you see this? This happens in real life too. And people start to talk about it. Well, did you hear about, Bill did this and Bill did that? And then what do they start to do? They mock you. They laugh you because the idea then is to kind of like trivialize you. You watch this in politics. You watch this in different things where, they ignore a candidate and they make fun of the candidate. And then when they can't make fun of you anymore, and when you've actually outgrown the mockery, and now you're on your own, then they fight you, and then you win. I love this. I think of this quote. I work on this quote. It drives me, in a way. And I think a lot of us need to focus more on quotes that talk about what we're capable of doing. Because nowadays, I feel like so many of the pieces of advice that we're given are made to, I don't want to say nurture and foster kind of the belief in being proud of our limitations. Because like, it's important. It is important if you feel bad to know that there's nothing to be ashamed of, right? If you feel weak, if you feel sad, I get it too, man. I get depressed and I get down sometimes. I've dealt with this my whole life. There's definitely times where I feel like awful. And it's great to read a quote telling me that's okay. It's okay to not get up today. All right, thank you. All right, I appreciate that. Congratulations. If you're reading, I don't know who needs to read this, but you did a good job today. Don't worry about it. I'm like, oh, thank you. I feel good. I'm on Twitter, they're giving you that. I hate that, man. I mean, I'm sorry to say this, but I really do hate it. I think it's really disingenuous. You read something on Twitter where it's like, I don't know who needs to read this today, but you're beautiful. And it's like, dude, you don't even know me. And this is written for anyone, Like Jeffrey Dahmer could have read that and been like, I'm beautiful. Like, you ate a person. You're not beautiful. You did a bad thing today. So you don't know who's reading it. You don't know. Not everybody's beautiful. It depends on the person that's doing it. Beauty's inside. Some people are disgustingly ugly on the inside. We meet them every day. So when you read a quote online that's written for anybody who picks it up, it's kind of BS, whatever. But a lot of what we do is to foster each other, and it's for mental health, and I get it, and it's appropriate, and it's something that's important, and I've talked about mental health, and I've talked about struggles with, different things that people deal with, whether you're dealing with bipolar disorder, whether you're dealing with, PTSD, whatever you're dealing with, it's good to have people out there understanding and willing to help you. But one of the things that I've noticed has stopped is this belief that people can genuinely do anything. There's a belief that we have to embrace our limitations first. You know, be proud of your limitations. It's okay to not be able to do that. It's okay if you can't get up. And it is okay if you can't get up. But at the same time, get up. Try. Do it. If you're listening to me right now, more so than telling you you're beautiful, I don't know if you're beautiful. You might not be beautiful. But I'm telling you, there's nothing that separates you from anybody else out there. There are people, and this is, again, something that you notice when you become a 40-something-year-old man and you've dealt with different people in the world. I have met some of the stupidest people who are so successful. When you're a kid, you don't realize that. You think these business owners, you're like, Billy's dad owns a business. Billy's dad owns a business? Yeah, Billy's dad must be a genius. Billy's dad is a schmuck, and he owns a business. Why? Because Billy's dad just kept going and just fought through it and believed in himself. And that's what you have to do, and that's what's important. And it's easy to not. It's easy to not. I've not. I've given up at times. What people don't realize is people think about, you know, if you know me, right? If you know me just from this podcast and just from the blog, and you see, well, he wrote these three books and he wrote for these magazines. I can list my resume all day long. I was in a memo at the White House for my first book when Donald Trump was vetting Linda McMahon as a potential cabinet member, and it leaked online and I picked it up, and there is my name mentioned twice in a White House memo, and it freaked me out. And I see that and I tell people that, and I'm sure there are people out there going, that's pretty amazing. James Gubbin must be popular. But what you don't see is I've written three books. Do you know how many I've pitched? Do you know how many emails I've sent out to people asking, hey, can I just send you a copy of the book? Nothing. Ignored. When I first started writing, right, this was like 2004, 2005, I was sending out emails all the time, trying to get my name out there, trying to find work, trying to find ways to parlay this wrestling writing, which is not exactly in many circles the most respected kind of writing at the time. You know, if you're writing about wrestling, that's great. I know for me, it was something I kind of outgrew, but I also knew at the time that it was an uphill battle all the time. In wrestling circles, you are fantastic. It's like, wow, you write about wrestling? You wrote for that website? But to a lot of other people, it's like, wow, you wrote about wrestling? You wrote for that website? And I wrote to, and I'm going to name it, man, the USA Today newspaper. And I don't remember what the email was or if I even used the right email to send it to, but I had written this long pitch about, hey, I currently write about this. I write for a newsletter. I have a book on the way. Professional wrestling fans are the most loyal fans in the world. I would love the opportunity to perhaps, you know, submit a column for you guys talking about some wrestling news or, you know, whatever. And it was this long thing, and I was proud of the way I wrote it. It was well written. It was polite. It was whatever. And like a day later, I got a response, and it was one sentence, and all it said, thanks, period, but I think we'll pass, period. And I don't know if I'm relaying it well, but it read, even though those are the exact words, it was like the most sarcastic slap down, kind of like a, you know, go F yourself type of mockery. And I remember that, man. I remember that to this day. And I remember that when I got that, I wanted to quit. I was so dejected. I really was. And I felt like everything that I had done up until that point, I hadn't done that much yet at that point. I had, you know, I've been writing a little professionally. I've been getting paid for doing it. Not a huge amount. Writing is a tough gig to really start, you know, making money from. And the reason why is because there's thousands of people just doing it for free online. So to be able to get money from it is tough. And it's tough to figure out ways to do that. You have to be willing to write not for money for a while. And even when you are making money, find places that aren't going to pay you to just get your name out there. It's all interlaced into each other. So you're doing free stuff and paid stuff all at the same time. But I felt so insignificant, and I felt so sad, I guess is the best word. I felt like I love doing this. I'm proud of what I do. People say that I'm a good writer. People enjoy my work. And yet here I am. And this guy, you know, I can't seem to get to where I want to go. And you question yourself. I question myself. I've sent out so many ignored messages, whether it's to publishers or agents or, you know, different places to write and things like that, that if I let that define me, I would have quit years ago. I would have been done with what I was doing, you know. And that goes to anything. It's not even just writing. I've had that with job applications. I've had that, you know, I've lived a life. So I've definitely had my ups and I've had my downs. And to get to these successful moments, I've had to go through those downtimes. And here's something that nobody ever talks about. And it's the risk that we take putting ourselves out there, which I think is what's the scariest part. You ever have somebody tell you, you got nothing to lose? You ever hear that? You know, I was thinking about applying to this job. I don't know if I'm qualified for it. You got nothing to lose. What do you got to lose? What do I have to lose? My self-respect, my self-confidence, my belief that I can do anything, my belief in my own potential. You know, my will to go on. Can I keep naming it? There are so many things you can lose. And every time you send out one of those messages, every time you put yourself out there, whether it's at work or whether it's online or whether it's in front of people socially, and you get kind of like rejected, that chips away a little bit at you. And it's a question of what can you do to keep going and to ignore that and to push on. And for me, I think that's the belief that you can do anything. And that's the belief that a lot of times is a law of averages. And you hear these things and they like to quote you stories about Abe Lincoln, you know, he ran for this and he lost and he ran for that and he lost. And you hear those stories and they're supposed to kind of like inspire you, but they sound so tiring. You know, that Abe Lincoln story sounds awful. I remember everybody would always say that. They'd start naming literally like 50 things that Abe Lincoln tried to do and he failed at before becoming the greatest president. And you hear it and it's supposed to inspire you, like, look, just keep going. That doesn't really help, and I'll tell you why. One of the things that keeps me going is that I try to put a lot of those rejections that I've gone through out of my head. I don't list them. I don't look at them again. You know, I haven't thought about that USA Today thing in a long time. And to read it all written out there, when somebody puts all the Abe Lincoln misery resume in front of you, it sounds exhausting. It sounds tiring and it sounds depressing. By the end of it, you're just like, how did Abe Lincoln like not just be like, screw you guys, I'm going home in my log cabin? He didn't. He just kept going and going and going. Good for you, Abe Lincoln. I don't know how you did it. And I'm sure if somebody sat down and listed all the things that I sent out, James Gutman sent out this email and that email and he did this and he applied for that, I would sound pretty depressing to say it out loud for myself, you know, to read my own stuff. And I think all of us out there, if we were to list our own, you know, our own rejections, it's very rare that you kind of hit pay dirt right off the bat. And sometimes when you do, it's not even that great because it kind of sets up a false sense of how easy it is. And I think we deal with that too. We'll get to that in a second. It's important to just kind of move forward, to take those rejections and kind of put them away, consider them a building block. And know that you can never achieve anything unless you try to do it. And I'm sorry I said that because I know it sounds like, you know, you can't do it, but it's really true. My first book was written for a company called ECW Press, which at the time was the main wrestling publisher, right? They did all the wrestling books, a lot of biographies and things like that. And I remember I wrote to them, said, hi, James Gutman, blah, blah, blah. Blah, write about this thing on Mondays. Maybe you heard of me. It's called Raw Insanity. I'd like to do a book about it. Da da da. And the publisher, the editor, knew my name, and wrote back to me. I love your work, man. I read you on Mondays. Yes, we'd love to have you write a book. And what was crazy was, and I thought about this a lot after the fact. He knew me. He wanted me to write a book, but he wasn't going to write to me. I had to write him that email. I had to reach out to do that, to get my foot in the door. I had no idea. If I had just sat around and kept writing and writing, it was kind of unlikely he was going to write to me, hey, James Gutman, you want to write a book? That never would have happened. I never would have written it and never would have happened. So that whole idea of like, you have to reach out and you have to do things, it's true. The problem is that sometimes you have to reach out over and over and over again, and you have to, at the end of the day, not let it define who you are and not let it become something that you focus on and not the kind of thing where you write it down. And I wrote to these, I wrote to that. It's easy to want to give up. It's easy to want to just walk away. It happened again with my third book, where it was just not about wrestling. I was now out of the bubble and I was trying to reach into the real world and I was reaching out to people and that wasn't happening. Then this book happened. Things like that happen. So believe in yourself. Don't let it eat away at you. And don't get a false sense of how easy it is. If you do reach out and something good happened for you and you became successful, like, very easily, that doesn't mean it's like that for everybody. If it was, it can't be. I think the balance of the world wouldn't allow it to be where everybody can easily achieve whatever they want to achieve. It takes work. It takes effort. But at the end of the day, if you are listening to this and you have a belief in something that you want to do, try to do it. Stand up. Go out. Keep doing it. What else are you here for? We are on this earth for a limited amount of time. Find what you want to be your calling and try to make it your calling. If you never achieve it, you never achieve it. But if you never try to achieve it, you're definitely never going to achieve it. So yeah, so it's good. You're allowed. You're allowed to be sad. You're allowed to have days where you don't want to get out of bed. You're allowed to have kind of down moments and sad times and all that good stuff. But at the end of the day, also believe in yourself and know that, you know, you're capable of a lot more than other people believe you to be capable of. You ever have one of those situations too? Like, you try to, you think you could do something, and people tell you you can't. They're like, no, don't do it. And in your head, you're like, I can do this, man. Like, let me help you. I'm going to help you move. No, I got it. I can do it. I used to be like that with, like, moving furniture. I'd want to move stuff. People want to help me. I'll get the other side. I'm like, don't. Please don't get the other side. I can lift this up. It's just a little table. I go, well, no, I'll grab one side. You grab that side. We'll go down the stairs. I'm like, I can just pick it up. And they insist. Then they grab one side. And now it takes like half an hour. And they're like, whoa, hold on a second. I got to lift it up. Like, yeah, dude, this thing weighs literally like 15 pounds. Can I just pick the thing up and walk down the stairs? So I've dealt with that too. I think we have all dealt with it. But a lot of life is about kind of teaching you to be weary of what you're capable of. I mean, there's a reason you got to raise your hand and ask to go to the bathroom in elementary school. And there's a reason why they sometimes tell you no. So it's pretty messed up. That's what life is. So believe in yourself. Reach for the stars. I don't know. Whoever has to hear this today, you're beautiful. Nah, maybe you're not beautiful. But you're capable of everything you believe yourself to do. You know you more than anybody else knows you. So if you're listening to this, I'm not going to tell you you can do anything. I'm not going to tell you you're beautiful. I'm going to tell you that you're capable of what you know yourself to be capable of. If you have a belief and you have a dream and you think you can do it because you know better than anybody what you can do. And that's it. So just remember that. Move forward. First they ignore you, then they laugh at you, then they fight you, then you win. Good luck. You could do it. All right. Yeah. Woo! Feeling good, right? Yeah. One of those weeks. I'm definitely having one of those weeks, man. It has been a roller coaster of a year for me. And let's talk a little bit about that belief. Let's talk a little bit about the blogs I wrote this week, because two very different blogs, both of them from me, from my brain, from where I'm at. And on Monday, it followed suit with what I'm talking about here today. On Monday, I wrote a blog called Don't Let These People Change Who You Are, right? It's on highblogimdad.com every Monday, every Wednesday. This one was important, and it meant a lot to me to write it. And it's because in my life, I do things for people. I sound like I'm trying to be benevolent. I sound like I'm trying to be some magnanimous, like, I'm quite a good human being. And I don't really mean it to come out that way. But in many cases, people question why I am the way I am. I'm not really mean, especially when it's somebody that I care about or it's somebody who's supposed to be close to me. I like to do things for people. I like to make people feel good. I like to put good into the world. That's why I do this blog. That's why I do the podcast. That's why I interact with people the way I do. People see the way I raise my kids and things like that. I like to do good, and I like to put good into the world. And a lot of it stems from my quintuple bypass. I know I was like that before as well, but really in 2012, when I had my quintuple bypass, 35 years old, couldn't believe it, shocking, got this new lease on life, this new belief, and I suddenly realized we all get one life, right? That's all we get. We get one, for sure. We might get a million. I don't know what the hell, you know, the grand scheme of things is. Maybe we all go live on a cloud. Maybe they send us back. Maybe they send us back until we do good enough that we can go live on the cloud. Whatever it is that they do with us after we're gone, the only thing we know 100% for sure, studied, researched, written on paper, is that we're here right now, and this is what we get. So if I'm here on this earth and I'm living this life right now, I want to live a happy life, and I want other people to live a happy life because they all get one life as well. So it's not really fair to take away even a moment of somebody's kind of, you know, good situation. So I don't do that. I try to make things good, and I try to be there for people, and I try to be a positive influence. And life sometimes puts you in a situation where you're surrounded by people who don't treat you that way. People who don't care what you've been through. They don't care about your story, you know. And if you're hearing this, you know what I'm talking about. There are people who have been like that, where you think to yourself, this guy doesn't know what I've gone through in my life. He doesn't know this is like a trigger for me, and this is a thing, and it's really, it's going to bother me. I'm just going to tell him. I'm going to tell him, hey, look, Bill, look, you don't seem to understand, man. When I was a kid, I used to, you know, people used to throw rocks at my head. So I get really kind of upset when I'm in a place and somebody throws rocks at my head. And Bill's like, screw you. And then he throws a rock at your head because Bill don't care. And that happens a lot. And of course, you know, Bill is kind of symbolic of other people and rocks are symbolic of other people. But at the end of the day, people don't care about your past. And I don't say people don't. There are people who don't, you know. And you find them in life. You're going to find people who love you. You're going to find people who cherish you. You're going to find people who think that the good that you put into the world is a good thing and they respect you for it. And you're going to find people who are going to take advantage of it and they're going to twist it and they're going to take and take and take from you until you're done. And then they're going to throw you away. And you're going to turn around after the fact and be like, what happened? Don't you remember? We did this and we did that. And I was there for you here and I did this for you and you and you and your family and all this stuff. And they're just like, yeah. What can you do for me now? And when that happens, the first time, this is what the blog was about, when you're like 20 and you're going into the world with this wide-eyed view of like, everybody's great. The first time you really get screwed over, and I don't just mean a little bit screwed over, like your friend stops calling you or something like that, but I mean hardcore, like you put everything out there for somebody and they like leave you like destroyed. And even as you try to explain, like, what are you doing? Don't you understand? I did all this for you. And they're like, whatever. It's easy to want to change who you are as a person. I'm not going to, that's it. I'm hard now. I'm not going to like, you're gone. I'm done. When I meet people, I'm going to be like, get away. But you don't do that the first time. And the reason why you don't do that the first time is because you overcome. And then you tell yourself, you're proud of yourself. So now you're like 22 and you're like, you know what? I was a good person and this guy sucked. And I went out there and I put all of it out there for these people to try to be a good person, whether it's, you know, a girlfriend or a boss or whatever it is. And they really screwed me over, but I'm not going to let them change me because I know that there's good people in the world and that person just sucked. So for the most part, the world is good. The world is a really good place. And I'm going to keep being a really good person. And that is fantastic. But the problem is that person really isn't an anomaly. There's a lot of people like that in the world. They're not all like that. And the trick is, after it happens the first time, and you let it kind of go off your back, and you go back out into the world as a good person again, when it happens again, and again, and again, to not let it change you. And that's where it really starts to get tricky. And the older you get and the more people that you run into, it's hard to not be that 50-year-old sitting in the, you know, at the bowling alley, giving advice to young people, you know. Hey, Gino, I'm getting married.
Oh, get married. Run. My ex-wife, oh, run. Don't get married.
Do you know, I mean, you hear that stuff all the time. Hey, Gino, I'm gonna have a baby.
Oh, they grow up and they suck. No, they grow up. My kid grew up and she stabbed me. She stabbed me in the leg.
And you're like, oh my God, Gino, holy crap. I don't want my kid to stab me in the leg. So you get like, you can be like that. You could be one of those people. I don't want to be one of those people. And the trick is to not be one of those people. And the only way to not be one of those people is to not let the people who kind of knock you down change who you are. Because think about it, man. If Gino, who's telling you not to get married and he's telling you not to have kids, at one point or another in Gino's life, Gino got married. Gino had kids. Gino was a happy human being, right? Now, all of a sudden, Gino hates the world. Why does Gino hate the world? Because Gino got screwed over. He got stabbed. He got divorced. Whatever happened to Gino? Holy cow. So don't be Gino. Move forward. Be who you are. Be a strong person. And don't let these people change you. Remember, people used to always say like, you know, if you don't go to the movies, you'll let the terrorists win or whatever they used to say. It's similar to that. If you change who you are, you let these people win. It's almost like they're recruiting more to be like them. They're like, we're crappy people. Let's recruit more crappy people. How do we recruit them best? We'll treat them like garbage, and then they won't be nice anymore. Oh, good idea. So don't do it. Be you. Be a good person. Put it out there. You're going to get screwed over sometimes, yeah. But at the end of the day, you're going to put a lot more good into the world, and eventually, If you wait long enough, you'll start to get your rewards and you start to find your people. They're out there. Look for red flags. You know, definitely be careful. Don't let people take too much advantage of you, but don't put walls up and don't become a different human being. Just be you. Be proud. Wednesday, completely different blog. Completely different blog. On Wednesday, it was a headline, a title that I struggled with because I thought people would read it and be like, what the hell is this? It's actually called Sloppy Wet Kisses. That was what I wrote on Wednesday. Surprised myself. Kept thinking, what else can I call this? And I'm like, that's the only thing I could really call it. And it is about disgusting kisses from kids, toddlers. Little kids come over to you. They want to give you a kiss. They're all sticky. Their hands are sticky. They want to hold your hand. It sticks to your hand like color forms. My daughter was like that when she was little. She used to always come over. You give her a kiss. Be like, what's on your face? How many times you say that as a parent? That should definitely be like one of the catchphrases of a parent. What's on your face? If they made those dolls where you pull the string and they say words out of parents, that would be one of the lines. And be like, you know, what's on your face? Where are your shoes? Things like that. My son, Lucas, is 9. He's nonverbal. He has autism. And he has a lot of sensory issues where he likes certain things. One of the things he likes to do is he likes to chew on blankets. I've written about it. I've talked about it. And he chews on this blanket. Even this morning, he was doing it. And it goes into his cheek like chaw, you know. He's out there. It's like Raleigh Fingers on the baseball mound. And he's chewing it. And it's in his cheek. And it's sopping wet. And he wants to kiss me all the time. And he freaking kisses me with the blanket in his mouth. And it's sweet. And it's a beautiful thing. But holy Jesus, it's disgusting. He comes over. And I go, hey, look at that. He leans. I'm like, oh, no, here it comes. Here it comes. And you can't be like, get away. You have to kind of take it. And you do. I want him to kiss me. And I think that's the weird paradox of the whole thing. I'm disgusted to like a ridiculous degree, but I'm also like affected by it, where I'm like, oh, thank you, buddy. And it got like this, it's almost like a sponge bath kiss, where it's like kind of like squishes against my cheek, and I'm like, oh my god, with this freaking kid. But I love it. I get that. He also doesn't really fully get kissing. This is really cute. Another one of his kind of his issues is he has like OT. He goes to school. He learns OT. OT is where, you know, the kids kind of work on cutting things with scissors and holding a pencil and things like that. And he works on a lot of that stuff. And we work on it at home. I actually have a candy machine, one of those ones that you put in the, you know, in the store, in the back of the store, those red candy machines. You put a quarter in, you turn it. I have one in the house and I have him come over and I've been working with him on that, where he puts a quarter in. I take his little hand and try to make him move it. So it's a lot of OT things. And one of the things that he can't really do is he doesn't pucker when he kisses. There's no, he doesn't do that. So his kisses have always been kind of like, just like his mouth kind of like just presses against you. If he has the blanket in his mouth, blanket gets pushed against you. That's disgusting. But he started, and you never know when it's going to happen. Occasionally, for his kiss, he'll come over with his tongue sticking out and push it against your cheek. And you never know when it's coming. Sometimes you don't see it and it happens. And sometimes he walks over and he's got his little tongue out. And I got to tell you, it is so difficult because it is probably the cutest thing I've ever seen. He doesn't put his whole tongue out. He doesn't like wag it out like a dog. It's only the very tip. And it looks like this little tiny pink upside down triangle just sticking out between his lips. And I look over and he's looking at me and he starts leaning. I'm like, oh my God, here it comes. I'm like, thank you, buddy. It's always like that. I make that. I'm like, thank you, buddy. Oh my God. Thank you, Lucas. Thank you. And it's adorable and it's cute. And it's a sign that you're a parent, is that you allow your kids, no matter how disgusting they are, to give you these kisses and to give you these hugs. And you love them at the end of the day. You love these embraces, no matter how gross they are. And you don't get to be a germaphobe. You don't get to be one of these people, you know, when you're young, where it's like, I can't even look at puke. Oh my God. Once you have a baby, you're just like, oh, is that puke? People are like, that's a parent right there, because you get used to these things. Not only do you get used to it, but in situations like when it comes to kissing, when it comes to hugs, when it comes to holding your hand, you actually like it. It's weird, you know. You could hold your hand. Why are your hands sticky? You know, I'll hold them. You just go with it. You know, you hug a kid. Your kid's all slimy. Like, why are you slimy? Ugh. You ever hear a parent do that? Like, ugh, you need a bath. They say that. And they hug their kid. Ugh, you need a bath. Come here, give me a hug. You're like, oh, it's a good parent. It's very rare. They're like, oh, get away from me, you little disgusting thing. All right, give me a hug. So that's what I wrote about on Wednesday. So if you have kids, you get it. If you meet my kid, you'd get it because it's the cutest thing. Even this morning, dude, we're taking pictures, and I take pictures of him all the time. He's got a blanket hanging out of his mouth, giving me kisses with him. Thank you, buddy. It's never too early. It's like, you know, 6:30 in the morning. He's kissing me with a blanket in his mouth. I'm like, thanks, bud. So it was a good morning, and it's been a good week, and it's going to continue to be good, and we're going to continue to move on, and things are going to continue to be good for you, for me, for all of us. Thank you for taking the time to listen to me once again this week for another edition of Hi Pod, I'm Dad. I want to thank you. Join me back here again next Friday for another edition. Head over to Baby Gaga. I'm the breaking news analyst over there. You can read some of my stuff. If it's about pregnancy or parenting, I'm writing about it. I'm learning about a lot of celebrities. I learned who DJ Tiesto is. I don't know if I'm pronouncing that right, but I wrote about him. He had a baby. That's cool. I wrote about a woman who was on a reality show that I didn't even know was a show. How's that? Wrote about that. That was fun. But also in between, I'm writing about studies and research. A lot of fun stuff, man. It's definitely stretching my spectrum of writing topics, and I've really been enjoying it. So go to babygaga.com. You can check out some of my stuff there as well. Pick up the Expectant Fathers Activity book. Go to highblogomdad.com. Come back here again next Friday. I will be here with another podcast. Until then, James Gutman saying, be well. Bye, pod. I'm Dad.